latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast. I am your host, Larry.
And I am your other host, Justin.
I am very excited for this movie review. I had seen it before, but it had been a while. And I was kind of aware of what Coppola did with the Vampire Story. But Justin, this was your first viewing of it, right?
Yes, my virgin viewing of this movie.
Yeah. So we're going to be getting into that. But first, we always about what we've been up to. But before even that, two announcements. First, I do want to announce that coming up on the week of the 26th, Justin and I are doing a collaboration review with another podcast. And it's a game review. So Justin, I'm going to let you talk about that.
So we're actually going to be reviewing a classic PC game, you know, Larry's favorite. So it's going to be System Shock 2. So the reason we're doing two over
I did one, try to play the first one first, audience, but it was unplayable.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those, like, older, like, really, really old games, some of them don't age well. Some of them age great. Like, I mean, I could go back and play the first Doom. But games like
why Doom has stood the test of time.
Yeah, I mean, there is a remake of the original System Shock coming out, you know, I mean, I'll keep my eyes on it, but, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, so we're going to be doing System Shock 2. And I don't know, I'm really excited that Larry gets to take part in another classic PC game.
Yeah. And why don't you tell the audience about who we're teaming up with for that?
We're actually going to be doing another, I think it's the first time since Resident Evil 2, we're actually going to be doing a four-man podcast.
Yes.
That episode. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be Alex and Zach from the Forever Classic Games podcast. They also do foreverclassicgames.com. It's a video game news outlet. And we've had a lot of back and forth between us and Alex. I don't think we've really talked to Zach that much, but I actually really look forward to working with him. And
this is going to be a full on bonus episode released. So it's just going to be in addition to what we already have scheduled.
Yeah. So I think we're recording that in the next week or two. And then I'm just
next Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to edit it and then I'll put it up when it's done.
All right. So then I lied. There's two more things we need to talk about. First is I want to mention that Whitney, we mentioned during the Silent Hill 3 review, posted some stuff in the Discord, and I want to share it with the wider audience too. She says, love the episode, guys. Thanks for the shout out to my own podcast. Probably a surprise. Didn't realize I'd listen to it. As for the Stephen King influence, from what I can tell, it's a general influence on the entire series. The Mist was a big influence on Silent Hill 1, The Fog, and even what Harry says when you make your first save on the notepad is a nod to the ending of the book. Apparently, I'm going to butcher this, Kiichiro Toyama had originally wanted to make a video game adaptation of Silent Hill 1, but was denied. I'm pretty sure Carrie's had a big influence with the young girl's special powers. There are tons of direct references to Stephen King, the first game of posters of various books, movies, and even the man himself. Not something I can tell with Silent Hill 3. It was mentioned that you guys thought the radio wasn't supposed to be doing what it ought, like going off when there were no monsters. Are you sure Val Teal wasn't lingering somewhere in the room? Usually the radio was still going off when there was creatures somewhere. Sometimes it's just out of reach, like on a ceiling or below you. Well, I guess that's true. And she said, I'm really excited to see what you guys think of the rest of the series. I actually really like Shattered Memories and Downpour myself.
Well then, Whitney, you're more than welcome to join us. She is like a fountain of knowledge when it comes to Silent Hill and Deadly Premonition. So
yes, she absolutely is. And then last thing before we get into the episode proper, we put out the Twitter survey.
Yes.
With the Google Docs. And I was actually looking at the data, and it's super cool because it gives you fun charts.
Oh, really?
It does the data analysis for you. And as a scientist, it makes me happy. So I'm going to read it. So for our question, our audience is 70% male, 30% female.
I'm pretty sure I know who the females are.
Our age group, 92% fall in the 22 to 35 category, whereas 7% fall in the 36 to 45 category.
Oh, interesting.
For what do you game on? The majority of our audience play on PS4, with 100% of our people who responded to the survey saying they own and play on a PS4, followed by the Nintendo Switch, and then followed by PC.
Oh, interesting.
Xbox sucks, and it's only back at 4.
I will say, I, I'm one of those Xbox people because, you know what? I love my backwards compatibility.
Sure. All right. So now, when do we generally watch new horror movies? Opening weekend is 23%. 1 to 3 weeks after it comes to theaters is 23% also. When it comes to a streaming service is 46%. And then irregularly, wherever I feel like it, is 7%.
Yeah, I think I usually fall on the streaming service.
Yeah. And then, so normally I'm not going to read all these out because how do you find the show? I just want to read the top two.
Yeah.
First is Twitter, and it's also tied with from another podcast.
I wonder what podcast.
Probably UFF for Golden Years, or potentially we advertised on No Cap the one time.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Then do you have any pets? Bunch of people with cats and dogs, a few with birds and fish, no lizards, and no one without any pets.
I mean, all
of our listeners are employed full time, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend watching movies a week? This one actually surprised me. 38% watch 1 to 3, 23% watch 9 to 14, and the largest portion, which was 38.5%, was 48 hours a week.
Wow, 48 hours. Well, I guess that's like two movies now.
Yeah, and now the crazy one. This one blew my mind. How much time do you spend playing video games?
I'm ready for it. I haven't looked at these, so.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at them earlier today. So the smallest pie piece of the graph with 7.7% is 9 to 14 hours. The second portion is 15 to 20 hours with 23%. Then the one that blew my mind, 30% of our audience play video games 21 or more hours a week.
I mean, I'm right there. I'm in there. That's pretty much what I do every night before.
But the largest portion, 39%, play somewhere between 4 and 8 hours.
Hmm, interesting. I'm glad we got a lot of gamers who love their games, apparently.
Something you like to hear on the show, be it a segment, movie, or game, Alice Madness Returns, Subnautica. Someone said they liked our pre-release Headhunter review, which we're chatting to do more of that, and actually we'll have that in a second. Someone said, keep doing you. I like the indie games. Classic film reviews. I like it as it is. The show is great. Don't mess with it. Outlast. Yeah, we do need to get the Outlast.
Yeah,
more Japanese horror, more interviews. And I would like to see horror themes explored in other media. For example, horror theme RPG or highlighted satanic imagery in Doom. Can't wait for something on Del Toro's new film, for sure. That will definitely be happening. And then, anything else you want to say to Larry or Justin? One is Larry rules, Justin drools.
Hey, you wrote that.
Well, we were testing I did, yeah. We should get together and play some more Forest, absolutely. Discord is pretty welcoming. Larry sucks at Destiny. Yes, I do. You have something really special, and every kid will have an academic approach to horror. So,
oh, nice.
Just some nice responses. So that's about all I have on, like, housekeeping stuff. And so they took up a lot of time. Justin, let's briefly tell the audience what you've been playing and watching the past week.
Oh, man. So this week actually has been a pretty slow week for me. I really just watched Dracula, and then I mean, we'll get into a little bit more, but I've also been watching this new show called Deadlands, which we'll get into in a minute.
Then for myself, I saw 1917 in theaters.
How was it? I keep seeing a lot of like crazy.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was very good. The cinematography in particular was amazing because it's like shot like one continuous shot. I still have Parasite and Marriage Story as my top two films this year. I need to see Little Women, Jojo Rabbit, and Ford v Ferrari still.
I actually, when Jojo Rabbit like first came out, I forgot to tell you about this, but I actually went and saw it.
Did you like it?
I love that movie. It's
yeah. I have Monday off and Devin has to work, so I'm going to go to the theater and just post up.
You definitely should.
And what else? What else? What else? What else? What else? What else? I've been playing a lot of Destiny 2. I forgot how much fun that game is.
You actually messaged me at like 1 o'clock in the morning during the week, telling me that it's ruining your sleep.
Yep, I think I did that like twice this week, which is just not good. And I picked up our next Silent Hill game. Justin has decided to pause chronological order and we are playing Silent Hill Origins next. So I picked that up from a used game store on the PSP. So I got to dig that out of my closet, dust it off, and charge it up.
Yeah, there is a reason for that, but I kind of don't really want you, Larry, to know until
that's fine.
We get to four, maybe.
And then the other game I picked up, I can't talk about because we haven't announced that project yet. But that's it. Obviously, I watched Dracula, and we're going to get into it. But first, Justin caught himself a screener of the Shudder original series Deadlands, and we're going to watch a quick trailer for that and get on into Justin's five-minute summary.
The dark is overtaking the light in our world. The veil between the living and the dead is breaking. And I must stop it.
Come on, you dogs!
AMC Network Shudder presents...
You can save him.
So what it looks like I here...
It walks easy. Fighting
is like Native Americans
is
or
that impressive enough for you, my brother?
Indigenous people are fighting zombies on a remote island.
Things yeah, it's like it's probably takes place in you will a fight fictionalized strange and powerful of like time before time kind of thing.
Idea. This is the only idea.
Hurry! Hurry! It looks very graphic.
There's something dark and wrong about us. You can feel it, can't you?
You're all going to die! Monster?
Shut up.
Promise me that we'll fix this world.
You could die with honor and join us in the afterlife.
The coloring looks really cool.
There are things I must
do. The zombies are like pale and ashy almost.
I'd like to leave it.
Then move your bones,
gore.
Old man.
Just gore everywhere. Holy crap.
Wake up.
All right, so it's called The Deadlands.
If I could sleep, stop waking me.
So it's called The Deadlands. Justin got himself a screener copy of the first episode, and he has access to episodes 1, 2, and 3. So for the next, I guess, 2 weeks after this, he's going to kind of give us a synopsis. But quickly, Justin, in a few minutes... What have you thought of the pilot?
So I was actually I've been thinking about this for, because kind of look behind, open the back door, whatever the hell, peek behind the curtain.
Open
whatever.
The back door?
Yeah, I know. Opening the kimono, is that what they say? I don't know.
I have no idea where we're going. Yes, continue on.
So I actually watched the first episode 2 weeks ago, and I've been hemming and hawing about how to describe this. And okay. I figured out the perfect way to describe it.
Let's hear it.
Okay, first thing. Have you watched The Walking Dead?
Of course. I watched the first 2 seasons. I stopped where they spent like 12 episodes at the goddamn farm.
Okay, so it's like 100 million times better than The Walking Dead. I'll tell you that right now. Even off the first episode, I liked it more than anything I've seen in The Walking Dead.
Amazing.
And the other thing is did you ever watch like Xena or Hercules like back in the
90s? Oh, yeah.
In like a weird like... kind of indie-ish way, it almost feels like that, but like a gory zombie version of like
those. So you're enjoying it so far?
Absolutely.
Are you excited to see like what the next episode has for you?
Yes, definitely. Cool. Like they leave it in.
Is the acting cheesy like the Xena and Hercules?
So that's kind of where a little bit. I think the main two actors, well, the main actor, the guy who's like chopping off the guy's head there, he is fantastic. And the girl who is talking to him there, she's like the other main character. I think those two are fantastic. The other characters kind of so far, we haven't really met a lot, but we met a couple. They're a little cheesy in like the cringy almost way, but they're not there long enough that you actually like, they don't really impact the show that much.
All right. So again, just trying to keep this short. This whole episode, how long is an episode?
It was 44 minutes. So an hour with commercials, I'm assuming.
Okay. Well, there's no commercials on Shudder. Is it all online?
I think it might actually be also be showing on AMC. Because Shudder. Shudder and AMC are like
That's right.
Yeah.
Will you be like eagerly awaiting the next episode?
So, absolutely. Cool. I've actually told a couple people, kind of like close friends and stuff, that like they should get Shudder just to watch this, because it's like,
oh, fun.
It's like, it's got this like weird, like grandiose sense of adventure behind it that like you don't really you don't really get it from a lot of shows now.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's you can tell a lot of love and care when I do it, and like you mentioned, like the coloring is done like really well.
It looked from the trailer, it looked really, really pretty.
It is.
So when does the pilot air?
So it is January 23rd, I believe. That's this Friday from when this episode comes in.
So next week.
Yeah,
next Thursday.
And I think it's the first two episodes actually come out next Friday.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and then every Friday after it's another episode. So.
All right, and so you have access to two more. So the next 2 weeks, you'll give us a breakdown then.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying not to like spoil anything.
No, that's I'm trying to keep it short too, because I don't want to even risk it. So, all right, fun. So that's our quick little non-spoiler discussion of AMC's The Deadlands. But that's it, Justin. Play me that epic theme music, and let's get in to Francis Ford Coppola, one of the best directors of all time. His take on Bram Stoker's Dracula. So like I mentioned during the opening part of the show, I had seen this before. I owned this movie. I actually really, really, as a kid, liked how Dracula's portrayed in this. But it had been a while since I'd seen it. And I have watched other work by Coppola since then. So I was kind of prepared for something like that. It wasn't that, but we're going to get into that later. As always, I do have some film background.
Yeah.
It's a 1992 Gothic horror film directed and produced by Francis Ford Coppola, based directly on the Bram Stoker novel, as obviously the title tells you. Coppola is one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. He's responsible for films such as the Godfather films, winning the Academy Award for Best Director for Part 2, Patton, which he won Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, and Apocalypse Now. He also directed The Conversation, another critically acclaimed film. The film stars Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder, Keanu Reeves, Cary Elwes, and Sir Anthony Hopkins. Gary Oldman is an amazing actor, and he's played roles such as Sirius Black in the Harry Potter films, Jim Gordon in the Dark Knight trilogy, the evil terrorist in Air Force One, the evil scientist in the 1990s Lost in Space, which I actually personally love. He was a drunk actor on the TV show Friends. He was the voice of Ignitus in the Spyro the Dragon franchise. And most recently, he won an Academy Award for his portrayal of Winston Churchill in Darkest Hour.
I haven't really played like the Spyro games that much. I know you, I think you love them, right?
I do.
From what I remember, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next, Winona, my first love. Like, that was my first on-screen love. She starred in Beetlejuice as Lydia Deetz. She was in Edward Scissorhands. She was in Heathers. And most recently, she was in Stranger Things. Keanu, obviously, is on a cult status of his own in pop culture. But I wanted to highlight his smaller roles, such as the hero of Speed, Hank from the very, very strange movie Neon Demon, the seduced father in Eli Ross, Knock Knock, and quarterback Shane Falco in The Replacements.
Wow, you really didn't go with any of like the main hits there, huh?
No, I didn't. We all know Keanu. All right, Cary Elwes was a star of the first Saw film. He was the bandit slash prince slash whatever in The Princess Bride, And my favorite role that he has played is as Pierre Despereau in the amazing television show Psych.
Wasn't he also in... did you ever watch the Fargo TV show?
No.
Oh, okay. You should. It's good. Anyways, okay. I think he was like a mayor in the second season, if I remember.
And then finally, Sir Anthony Hopkins, very well known by horror film fans for his Oscar-winning performance as Hannibal Lecter. He's also a truly amazing actor, and he's actually nominated this year in the Academy Awards for Best Supporting Actor for his performance in Two Popes.
Interesting.
He won't win, but it's nice to see that he's there.
Yeah.
Because he's still just an amazing actor. The film was scored by Walsh Kilar, and this is pretty much his only major Hollywood film that he scored. Kilar teamed up with Annie Lennox, who is the lead singer of the 80s band Eurythmics, to make Love Song for a Vampire. It's a song that played during the end credits. And it is actually became an international hit. So that's fun.
Yeah.
The movie was shot on a budget of $40 million and went on to gross over $215 million at the box office. Again, this is an R-rated film in the early 90s. So that is bonkers numbers. The film was nominated for 4 Academy Awards, and it won for Best Costume Design, Best Makeup, and Best Sound Editing.
No Best Acting, no?
This was the first time that we have seen the Count break away from the aesthetic established by Lugosi almost 60 years prior. He wears modern clothes and ditches the black cape. The film is credited with creating new vampire tropes, such as retractable fangs, a steampunk aesthetic, and Dracula transforming into a literal Batman. Also, I thought this was important. This came from Wikipedia, and I want to put this in here because I think it's important to put here because I think Justin and I are kind of came away from this with a similar thought. So again, directly from Wikipedia. The film appeared in Entertainment Weekly's 5 Best Vampire Movies, Forbes' Top 10 Best Vampire Movies of All Time, Esquire's 20 Best Vampire Movies, and Sexiest Horror Movie Ever Made. IndieWire's 100 Best Horror Movies of All Time, the 12 Best Vampire Movies Ever Made, Oldman's Dracula featured in Forbes' list of Hollywood's Most Powerful Vampires, as well as The Guardian's 10 Best On-Screen Vampires. He was also ranked as the best version of Dracula by Screen Rant. In honor of sci-fi's 25th anniversary in 2017, the channel compiled 25 greatest lists celebrating the last 25 years of all science fiction, fantasy, and horror. Oldman's Dracula was included in the 25 greatest movie performances from the last 25 years.
Okay.
Do you now see why I wanted to include that?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to do the plot.
Yeah.
This is your first, last, and only spoiler warning, but if you've been listening to the last episodes, you kind of know the synopsis of this. So I'm not going to do a 60-second summary for time's sake. Basically, it's Nosferatu.
But hornier.
And, huh?
It's Nosferatu, but hornier.
I would say it's Nosferatu plus Dracula with a lot more sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's basically it, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
We have a new character introduced in this one called Lucy, mainly just for us to see how Dracula feeds. Renfield is more fleshed out as a character, but I'll get into that pros and cons. But the plot's pretty much the same, with the exception of my first pro for plot. Probably my favorite thing about this movie is I like getting into the background of Count Dracula, his motivations of why he became a vampire, and the logic behind his obsession for Mina.
Yeah, that's one of my pros, is I actually enjoyed the fact that this movie started a little differently than the other ones. And yeah, we got to see kind of what drove him to be this, like, I mean, what turned him into Dracula, really. Like,
and again, I skipped the 6-second plot summary. So what happens is that Count Dracula, and he's fighting the Ottomans, he goes off to war, he kills a bunch of them in order to get revenge on him. They tell his love by firing an arrow through the window that he died in the battlefield, and she casts herself off. So she's banned from heaven. So Dracula stabs the cross in the altar. It drains blood. He drinks it, and he becomes a vampire.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
And so Mina Harker is actually the reincarnation of his long-lost wife, Elisabetta. Hence his obsession for her. Right? It's good though, because it's the motivation we were kind of missing. It's like, why is he coming to London? Why is he so focused on Mina? Like, what is this driving force?
Yeah, it is definitely nice to finally, like, because I mean, that was my issue with, I mean, the other two Dracula movies we've seen is the why does he move there?
But yep.
Like you said, we finally have a reason. Once he kind of sees Mina, that's kind of it. He knows where he's going.
Another pro I have is that I've discussed this several times now, but the Dracula novel is more of like journal entries and phonograph recordings and stuff like that. I really liked how they chose in this to implement that at times. And yeah. I thought it was done well when they did it.
I agree. Like the narration over kind of what was like the start of scenes narration was really good. I mean, we'll get into the acting later, but
yes.
Yeah.
Seeing the character of Renfield actually be fleshed out and have much more of a positive role in the story, I thought was pretty cool. Because we complained about that. So we actually got to see him fleshed out and see his motivations and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we actually like, I mean, it did really. Okay. Do you know what the creators of South Park look like?
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. He looks exactly like Trey Parker.
Okay.
The tall, goofy guy with glasses. Yeah. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, it kind of, when we first see him, we don't really know what's going on with him. But yeah, over the course of the film, we kind of spend, it is just like little tiny snippets of time with him. But
yep.
they do a really good job of fleshing him out, kind of, and even showing like his softer side at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Getting to see Dracula's brides do something more than just like kind of walk around in the shadows was very, very cool. And this is the first piece of vampire media that we have reviewed on this podcast where the sexuality of the vampires is really brought to the forefront. Like the seduction, the sex, like obviously it's implied in Bela Lugosi's, right? I mean, the idea of a vampire is there's like a lot of like sex inherent in it. But in this one, it is just there.
Yeah, it really did bother me how they like bit his dick,
feeding off him, it was very, very creepy. More than Nosferatu or the Universal Dracula film that we've already reviewed, this movie has a very clear plot, and all the characters have very well defined and understood motivations. And I feel like that is a better way to do it because it allows Dracula the character to be better understood by the audience.
Yeah, I would agree with that for like the most part. I think the main players have good arcs. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kind of dip into a con here. I think like I can't think of his name, but like the Texan.
Yeah.
I don't think he's got like, his arc is kind of like wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, really.
I'm talking about Helsing, Dracula, Mina Harker, and Jonathan Harker are the ones I'm mainly talking about there.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair then.
And then my last pro before we get into cons is I think my favorite thing about this film, and it's the reason why my score is going to be so high, is that Gary Oldman truly did bring the character of Dracula and made it his own and made it different. He comes across sympathetic while also being terrifying. And because of the other characters in this movie, which I think we'll get to probably in acting or cons even, I was rooting for Dracula to be able to win Mina. I was. I love Dracula. I thought that his performance was awesome. I thought his motivations were cool. I liked how like he, even though he really, really wanted Mina, he like tried to push her away and didn't like want her to become a vampire. You know, he didn't want to damn her to that. I don't know. I really, really liked the performance. I thought it was great. I liked how he like kind of stalked her through the street and how he like slowly got her to fall in love with him instead of just like taking it by force. I don't know. It was just romantic in a really, really nice way. And I love, and then I also just like, I like his change. I'm sorry, I'm going on a rant here, but I like his changing persona. We first meet him as this old decrepit Dracula, right? And he's super creepy. Like when he licks the blood off of Keanu's razor when he's shaving, like that was in like his shadow movements. I'll give it a cinematography. And then he comes to London and he's like young and suave and he's got the steampunk look. He's got those glasses and like, I don't know. And then like he starts to get like injured and like, I don't know. I just really think that this Dracula is my favorite portrayal of the Count we've had yet.
I will say, to counter your point about him slowly, not forcefully putting himself onto Mina, there is that one part where he holds her down and she's like, no, stop, when they go to see the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And then like 2 seconds later, but it's like, my fluffy dog.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's like, but wait, I got a puppy. Okay, so those are my pros. If you have anything else, I have some cons.
I do kind of have something else, and it's kind of like something that doesn't really get flushed out, but I kind of enjoyed it as like flavor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's two things. When we kind of first meet Van Helsing, yes. And he's like giving that like weird like speech in front of all of his like, I don't know students. If they're like his students.
They're students. Like, they're students. Yeah.
I really enjoyed that kind of. It gives you like, it lets you know what kind of person he
that
is.
That
like,
is probably the best thing about Van Helsing in the whole movie.
Well, we'll get into that later. But
oh, that's actually, my first con. So
okay. Well, hold on. That thought.
Let me get my one other. You finished? Okay. Yes.
The other pro I have is the time we spend with the doctor in the mental institution. We get kind of like quick snippets of it, and he's like shooting morphine and stuff. I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't really go into it, but I like it. It kind of gives you like this like realization. I like, okay, something's going on there. Like he's not 100% right, but it doesn't really.
I have that actually in audio.
Oh, okay. Okay.
More just talking about the character development and stuff.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, well then let's go it's right fine. Into it's cons.
Van Helsing.
Okay.
Super weird. Like creepy. I hate that performance. I love Anthony Hopkins. Like, he obviously Hannibal Lecter, like I mentioned, but he was in Westworld. Like, he's been in so many things, and he's great. Like, even in Hannibal, which was like, not a very good movie, he was amazing in that. Funnily enough, Gary Oldman was in that movie too, but that's neither here nor there. I hate it. And, like, probably the best scene to kind of highlight that is that when he finally figures out that Lucy has been visited and feasted upon by a vampire, he tells the dudes to hold the fort, humps one of them, and then forces his student, Dr. Seward, to take him to go get a bite to eat.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's like super weird. Like when he first meets Mina and he's like getting all real close and like telling her how she's like...
He makes out with her later in the movie.
Yeah, it's a fucking weird movie.
Everyone makes out with Mina. Everyone gets a kiss on Mina. It's insanity. Next con, allowing Dracula to walk in daylight was a nice change, especially because there was no sparkles. But I wish that had actually amounted to something other than allowing him to stalk Mina.
Okay, like you feel like it was just there. So the fact that like
they could shoot that scene in daylight.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. Because I think.
Because it didn't do anything. It didn't give I don't know. It just didn't give. To change the rules, fine. Like, I have no problem with changing the rules if you establish that you did it, right? But, and they definitely say, like, during the voiceover, they even make mention that, like, it's not true. They can do it. They're just weakened. Yeah. So I thought that was going to come to something, and it never did.
Yeah, or, like, maybe, like, during the day is when they can injure him kind of thing. But, yeah, you're right. It didn't really come. Anything happened.
Next, Lucy really needed to be given more clothes to wear while she was sleeping and sick. Instead of just being dressed like she's in a brothel all the time.
Yeah.
Like she'd be sitting there writhing and like in pain or dying, and then like her boob would fall out.
I think we're kind of getting into the like some of these movies are just like, you know what? It's been like 20 minutes. Let's just have a boob there.
Yeah. It kind of had that feeling from time to time. A really, really big con is that Harker really had no role to play in this movie.
That's okay with me.
I will save for audio Keanu's performance, but like, because like, okay, so I guess I didn't talk about some pros, but I like how Mina has to save herself. In the end, she decides to not stay with Dracula to free him from his pain, and she kills him. She's the one who kills Dracula.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cathartic. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was done really well. And I'm going to talk about the final scene when we get the cinematography. But Renfield could have played this role for Harker.
Yeah.
Instead of like bringing him back to be here, especially for how lackluster his Keanu's performance was, I just feel like Harker's role in this portrayal is one of the reasons why I like Dracula so much. Like, screw Keanu. Like, Dracula's cool. Go with him. That dude's, that dude rocks.
Well, I mean, like Harker was, like, gone for half the movie, too. Like, we didn't hear anything from him. Which, I mean, I guess it kind of, like, makes sense. He's being
feasted upon and, like, kept back by Dracula's bride, which is fine. But, like, he didn't do anything.
No. No, he didn't.
Like, he really played no role at all in the film.
Man, I really want you to watch that Dracula series.
All right, next. The Mina Elisabetta connection, I wish had been a little bit more fleshed out, because obviously they're both played by Winona. And there were times, especially when Mina was drinking absinthe with Dracula, where it seemed like she was like harnessing Elisabetta.
Or like, right? She like knew it was her in like a different lifetime kind of
thing. Yeah, that's why I didn't know if like there was, if she was reincarnated, because if she was reincarnated, then that would kind of mean that Mina should have been with Dracula in the end, right? Because like she was actually her. It's kind of different from, this would be a weird reference, but the Mummy Returns.
Yeah, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
There's the girl, right, who thinks that she is a Nocturnal Moon reincarnate.
Yeah.
But she spurns the mummy's love. He kills himself and she dies, right?
Yeah.
So it's not – but this one is a little bit different because I think she actually is. So it's very, very strange.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that's like one of the things that would have been nice if they went like a little deeper on.
Yeah, I don't need handheld. I don't need it like all laid out. But like there seems to be more there than what we were given, and I wish we had gotten it.
Yeah. No, yeah, right. I can agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
Next. The final act, like when they go chasing after Dracula.
Like back to Transylvania?
Back to his castle was way too fast. For how slow the rest of the movie was paced and how much it took its time, that last act was like that. It was just in and out. And I wish more time had been given to it because it was super cool. Like especially like riding up on Dracula's castle, because Dracula's castle looks like like someone's sitting on a throne, which we'll get to in cinematography.
Yeah.
It's just... I don't know. It was just way too quick. And then, like, when Mina and Van Helsing are attacked by Dracula's brides, and the next thing we know, Van Helsing's, like, up in the castle cutting off their heads. It's, I don't know. It was just way too fast-paced for me.
Yes, especially because, like, they're kind of given this, like, image of, like, okay, they are also, like, just as deadly as Dracula. Yeah. But, yeah.
And he waits till daylight, but we were already told that they can still be vampires in daylight. So, I don't know. It was weird. That's about all I have for plot. Anything else you want to add into it?
Not really. I mean, like, there was the point where the Texan died that I think was supposed to be more emotional than it was, but I don't think we were given
that. Well, I didn't care about it because I wanted Dracula to win.
Oh, I just didn't like, care about
it. At that point in the movie, I was entirely Team Oldman. Like, I wanted everybody to die except for Winona and Gary Oldman, and I wanted them to live in that creepy-ass castle and feast on flesh forever. That's where I was at.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. For plot, I gave it a 7.
I also gave it a 7.
So you liked it more than Belle of the Ghosties, at least.
Oh, yeah, definitely. For plot. For sure. Yeah, plot.
Cinematography. Pros. I do not think it can be argued that this film looks gorgeous, and it has some truly amazing edits.
Yes.
And I'm going to first point out my favorite one, and I literally rewind. I pushed a button and went back a few scenes, like I just pointed out to Devin, when Dracula and Mina are sitting at the table talking.
Okay.
And like their faces are kind of like moving back and forth, like one's talking and the face is behind it, then it kind of switches back and forth and it kind of misleads you, but then all of a sudden Dracula is like actually sitting beside Mina. It's not just his face hovering there. He's actually there. There are a lot of scenes like that in this movie that really were very, very cool, especially for a main like studio film back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Like they took a lot of risks when it came to how this movie looked and what they did with it. And I would say most of their risks turned out well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Most of them did. Most of them.
I also thought that the first person POV view for Dracula worked okay.
Yeah, I don't think it worked like as good as like let's say like The Fog or whatever the hell you want to call it from like Evil Dead, but it definitely like worked for what they were going with.
Because it kind of looked the same as that, and I guess I would have expected a little bit more, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was okay.
I guess I like when we see Dracula moving through the city as if it was shot back in the 1920s, like with back when Nosferatu was shot by Murnau, right? It looked like that, except it wasn't. Like, do you know what I mean?
No.
it's when Dracula first gets to London and he's walking around and he runs into Mina.
Yes.
Okay. And it's shot like it's on that old timey film. Like, it's kind of the film shaking, okay, and it goes black and white and it fades into color.
I thought you meant like the scene is like the exact same and
how they put that in there. Yeah. And then also another thing that I really, really like has to do with how they treat Dracula. There are so many times where there's like reflections present, but Dracula's not there. And not just ones where they call your attention to it. I'm specifically talking about there's one time when Dracula and Mina are walking around and there's a reflection in a window. Like not even a glass, but like a light reflection, and he's not there. There's a lot of little things like that that I appreciate as someone who like likes the lore behind vampires, and you establish that rule. I like when you keep it as consistent as possible, and that was very, very good for me. And then the other big thing that I loved is how Dracula's shadow moved without him.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah, there are so many cool shots of that. I don't know. It was just super cool. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, like, this would be a good place to put it. But like, even like when he was, I think this could have looked really cheesy, but when he was like climbing on the side of the castle wall when Harker first saw him.
Yeah.
I think like stuff like that, like it's kind of risky because it can come off very hokey. And I mean, some mm-hmm. stuff later on does, but yes. I think like stuff like that worked. They definitely took a lot of risks. And like you said, mm-hmm. like most of them worked. Some of them didn't. Some of them really didn't. But I think
I have those written down. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous movie.
Yeah. The costumes. They definitely deserve an Oscar for best costumes. You disagree?
Yes. not
okay. Not so I guess I'll give like why I think they should, and I want you to tear it apart.
Okay.
So I thought that all the women's attire and the men attire for that time period looked very good. It looked all true to form. It looked like it fit the time period very, very well. Next, and most importantly, Dracula. His battle armor, his old man robe, the steampunk look, the final confrontation gold robe, like they all just look so good. Like, and to buck tradition, right? And to leave the aesthetic that was established by Bela Lugosi, right? I mean, that's what it was. It was a huge risk, but it worked out amazing. Like, I honestly, because again, I saw this movie when I was a kid. And I think I saw this one before I even saw the Universal one. And I think that old man Dracula, like in the red robe, is the one that I most think about when I think of Dracula.
Yeah, he definitely looks the best.
But why do you think the costumes aren't that good?
Okay. So personally, his start of the movie armor, like his like weird, like muscly meat armor, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. It's just
the fibrous tissue looking ripped and shredded.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. I don't know. I think it's because
you're wrong. He looks so cool.
It looks so stupid. It reminds
me of that if we were playing like an old
absolutely not. It reminds me of like
it probably had buffs. Calm down. It was awesome.
It reminds me of like The Cell. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
Oh, with J Lo.
Yeah, it reminds me of
who was robbed of a best actress nomination, in my humble opinion, but that's not here nor there. Yeah. Wrong podcast. Continue.
So other than that, I would agree that I think like the general public and like even Dracula to a certain extent looks really good, like costume wise, and all the actresses and actors look good. I hate his like weird little purple glasses. I think they look very stupid.
I love them. The Aussie glasses.
I hate it.
Whenever I see that, my dad had Osmosis, that album.
Okay, yeah.
And they had a picture of Ozzy in the back or in the cover. Not on the cover, but in the booklet.
Yeah.
Of Ozzy wearing those like tiny purple glasses.
And see, I think it would have worked if he had worn them all the way up, except for they were like down.
I loved it. You don't like steampunk?
I think it's okay, but
you don't like steampunk. Okay. You're wrong. The Academy sides with me and also, it won an award for it.
I understand the practicality behind the asylum guards having like cages for
Okay.
Helmets.
Okay.
But they all right, look fair. So stupid. I mean, it looked better in 13 Ghosts on the Jackal.
I was just going to say, I saw it and immediately I thought of that. Yes. Yeah.
But other than that, yes, I think they did an okay job with costumes and stuff.
All right.
But...
that's the Asylum guards wearing 13 Ghosts helmet was a very, very good point. Next, the makeup. Wow.
Yeah, I'll give you that on the makeup.
Holy crap. Obviously, I've been harping on Dracula Dawson the whole time, but when Lucy was slowly turning into a vampire.
Yeah.
I really like the Batman-looking Dracula form, too.
Yeah, he looks actually kind of like the Jeepers Creepers monster, actually.
Or like a werewolf, right? Some kind of hybrid, but it looked good. It looked good. We didn't see a transformation or anything, but that's also not this kind of movie, right? We don't need that. So yeah, I think that was well-deserved. And then I mentioned this during plot, but the final shot when Mina cuts off Dracula's head, right? Like she frees him from his curse.
Yeah.
And the light, like the image inverts. So you're looking up at the top of the chapel with Vlad like reaching out to hold Elisabetta.
Yeah.
And the light starts coming in and it shows that like he's finally reunited with his long lost love. There is just something so beautiful about that shot. Like, it was probably my favorite shot of the whole movie. I just loved it. I just really, really, really liked how that movie ended. Because the only character who I liked like got peace in the end. So I was happy about that.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I can definitely get behind that, yeah.
All right, cons, unless you got someone else.
No, I'm ready for cons.
All right.
That blue fire looked ridiculous.
Movie, particularly early on, where it was way too dark. Yes. I literally had to pause the movie and bump up my backlight in my TV in order to be able to see what the hell is going on. And I was watching on the Blu-ray Collector's Edition.
Was this like Game of Thrones or something?
I don't know. It was just so hard to see.
Yeah.
Like, I was literally telling, like, especially when Keanu was like moving through his castle, I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see how bad the CGI was at first of Dracula climbing the wall.
Yeah.
It was way too dark. And I can't imagine being in a theater and watching that. Because in the theater, they had like the side lights, so they always kind of cast kind of a glare.
See, and I don't know, because like I didn't have a darkness issue with mine.
Okay, like I fixed it. I mean, I always had my TV on vivid, so I was surprised that wasn't enough, but it was a problem for me.
I always go with like cool.
Okay.
But I also have a movie mode.
Blu-ray remastered.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah, that's fair.
We mentioned already, some of the CGI looks pretty crappy.
Oh my God, that fire looks stupid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Okay. Kind of on the CGI, when Mina comes across Lucy and the werewolf having sex, and he like looks over and his face is kind of half there in like weird CGI.
I didn't notice that.
Oh, I did. It looked horrible. Okay. Wow. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like Dracula's eyes just hanging out in the background. I didn't care for that.
His eyes hanging in the background.
Yeah, was it Mina or was it Jonathan? One of them are riding in a carriage, and Dracula's eyes are just like in the background.
Yeah.
All right. Then my last con, Justin, that I have is I really did not care for how much they sexualized Lucy in every single shot when she was sick. I know she's turning into a vampire and the bloodlust and all that, but like literally, it seemed like there she is, and oh, there's a boob. There she is, and oh, there's her boob. Like, no one wanted to cover her up. No one tried to, like, hide her decency because she's supposed to be a virgin, right? And, like, they just didn't care, and I didn't like that.
Oh, was she supposed to be a virgin?
Yeah, she talked to, like, she was more experienced. Remember, like, she was, Mina was reading
Arabian Nights,
and it had those pictures in it, and they were joking around about it, but Lucy was a virgin, too.
Oh, I thought she was, like, getting it on with the three people before she...
Well, she was... courting them, but she wasn't getting off of them.
Right. Different time back then.
Yes. All right. So that's all I have for cinematography. Unless you have anything else you want to add?
No, I said my piece about the CGI and the costumes.
Okay. I gave it a 7.
I gave it a 6.
Moving on to audio. I have said this a lot already, and I won't harp on it too much. Gary Oldman is my favorite Dracula we have done so far.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's not even close. Like, I love. Well, the performance we got Nosferatu, Bela Lugosi is an icon, but Gary Oldman brought such a personality and such a character to Dracula in so many different forms that I don't know. It blew my mind. It really, really was an amazing performance. I'm surprised he didn't get Best Actor nomination for it, yeah, to be 100% honest.
No, I agree with you. I think he is. I might be getting ahead of myself here, but the only good actor in this movie.
Let's calm down a little bit. Maybe we'll see. I really like Cary Elwes as Lucy's fiance. I think he had a lot of emotion when Van Helsing made him kill her. I thought he did a great job, and I really thought like he was torn. Like, he wanted to protect her, and he didn't want to kill her, and he was like questioning. I thought that he did a great job. I really did.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of forgot that he was in this movie, but thinking back on it, like, yeah, he was good. And I mean, even when like Dracula first came in the room and he like stood up to, even though he knew he probably couldn't do anything, he tried to defend her anyways and got thrown into a wall. But
Yep, next performance, I like Renfield.
That's a good
point. We were literally asking each time. We kept asking each time for more of this character, more fleshed out, more understanding. And I thought that the guy who played him did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm starting to take back that only good actor, but I'm not far off.
The soundtrack to this movie, like throughout, culminating in the theme, was amazing and probably the best we've had in a very long time on this podcast.
I agree with you that it's good. But I don't know. It's definitely not, personally, again, I think we've had better, obviously, but I think we've had better recently as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one do you think is better recently?
I mean, I was going to say Silent Hill, but I realized that that's a video game.
Trying to keep it vampires so far.
Ooh, vampires. I mean, going back and re-listening to Swan Lake, it did sound pretty good.
Yeah, you didn't even know what Swan Lake was. All right, this isn't a pro. This isn't a con.
Okay.
Winona is Winona. She has never been the kind of actress who, like, can change who she is for a role.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this as someone who literally loves Winona Ryder. Okay? So I'm putting that out there. But I think her being Winona worked perfectly in this film.
Yeah,
see, like the babe lost in the woods, I really thought it worked well. I did.
I don't know. It was just like it was just kind of like a little bit more flat than usual to me.
I can see that, but I mean, it's just Winona Ryder. That's
exactly. Like I didn't take off a ton of points for her, but yeah.
Okay. Now on the cons.
Oh boy! All right, here we go.
I love Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I keep talking about how I'm waiting to see a good performance for someone playing Van Helsing.
This is not the movie for that.
This is not it. Like, he was introduced super cool and I had a lot of high hopes, and again, it's been a while since I've seen this movie, but like, I see him as this grizzled old scientist, but in this one he was so goofy. He was literally humping people. Like, he goes from crazy to insane to lustful, like in like the blink of an eye. I don't know. I really, really did not like this performance from Anthony Hopkins, and that's weird for me because I love him.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks because, like, again, this is my first viewing, and, like, as soon as I didn't look up who played who or anything like that. So I didn't even know Anthony Hopkins was in this, to be honest, until I saw him, and I got really excited. And he, like you said, his intro was super cool, but then it just, like, goes downhill super fast from that. Like, it's insane.
Keanu.
I was going to save him for last.
Yeah. Okay, we save him last. All right. Okay. The next one, Dr. Seward.
Okay.
He's a weird, weird dude, like shooting up the morphine, kissing your friend's sick fiance when you're supposed to be helping her.
Well, he was
torturing insane people. Like, his character was just weird in like
all the
wrong kind of ways.
I mean, he was in love with me. I mean, it showed that the three of them.
Yeah, were but there. I don't know, man. It was just too weird for me.
I can definitely see that. I think his performance is like, to me, it's middling, kind of like he's up there with Winona, just kind of meh, not great, but eh.
All right, Keanu. Now, let me preface this, that I do like Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah, no,
okay? So before we get his horde of loving fans all over us, I do like Keanu Reeves. I do. But my gosh,
that you accent.
Online, look at some of the reviews for this, people crapped all over him for a very lackluster and boring performance. And he was extremely lackluster and extremely boring. And like I've said so many times, I wanted Mina to end up with Dracula because I did not like him at all.
Yeah, and it's weird because like I feel like this was at the tail end of him being like typecast as the like dude bro who's like the stoner guy.
Yes, this was kind of the movie that transitioned him into doing more serious work.
Yeah, and I'm I'm glad it exists. I myself do not enjoy any bit of it. I like what comes after this movie from him.
Like, yeah, because he's also kind of boring in The Matrix, I guess, a little bit. The first Matrix. If you watch the first Matrix, he doesn't have a lot of emotion. He's very dull, right, throughout most of that movie.
Yep, okay.
All right, we can disagree, but yep. I don't know. And this one, like, I needed more from Jonathan Harker, and we did not get it.
Oh, no, he was absolutely the weakest character in this entire movie. He, like, brought this movie down for
me. So because of how much I like Gary Oldman's performance, Cary Elwes as well, and how much I really enjoyed the soundtrack, my score is kind of higher than I'm guessing yours is going to be.
Okay.
I gave it a 7 again.
I give it a 4. I, like...
Really?
Yeah, it, like, I think that everything except for...
You think it's the same kind of acting performance as the Salem's Lot film?
Yeah, everything is like, other than I'll give you Gary Oldman and Cary Elwes, but everything other than that is just like overacted and not great. And then, I mean, Keanu is like, it's bad. It is bad.
All right. Moving on to the final category, how scary. Again, we don't do pros and cons here. We more have a discussion. I do want to point out there are some legitimate scares in this film.
For some people.
I think that the scariest parts for me are whenever Dracula's brides are on screen. I think they are very scary. I think especially when we see them, like they're conjoined twins, like moving around and stuff, like and the way they move in that like kind of like stop motion kind of way was super spooky, and like feasting on Keanu, like it was very, very, very scary. I like the portrayal of Dracula a lot. They make him a complex character dealing with a lot of very, very serious issues. Watching him struggle, like wanting Mina, but also not wanting to condemn her is very hauntingly beautiful to me. We see he's a monster by how he feasts on Lucy and how he kills indiscriminately, right? He kills everybody on the ship when he comes over.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, we still, I don't know. That's like kind of the thing about vampires that I like so much is that like, when it's done well, and we'll see this also in Lost Boys, I think, but when you don't really want to see him fail, you know, but it's a monster, but you want him to succeed, even though you know he's a bad person. Like, I don't know. I love it. And Dracula not being a love, he's not just a lovesick puppy, right? He has a presence. He, like, no matter his form, he's very terrifying when he's the old man, when he's steampunk, when he's the Batman. Like, there are so many different ways that are great, and I love how they manipulate his movements through rooms, like manipulating the shadows, or how he popped on one side or the other, how he was talking to Mina through the streets. There are so many things with how they handle the character of Dracula that just leaves so much to the imagination, and I thought it was really, really, really good. But since I don't like the character of Lucy very much, I don't care that she got fed on. I don't like Jonathan Harker or Van Helsing, so when they're in danger, I don't care. And since I know that Dracula loves Mina, and that even if he were to change her, because she didn't want to, because he was struggling with it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I really never cared about any of the characters who were in danger. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yep, 100%.
And so for a horror movie and for scares, right, you want to be invested in the characters. It's one of the reasons why Gerald's Game is so great is because what's her face? I'm blanking her name right now.
Giugino.
Carla Giugino. Thank you. Like, we're so invested in her character, right? We want to see her, like, survive. And, like, that's one reason why it's so scary, because all this stuff is happening to her. We're in desperate fear. We're terrified of what's going on. And because I never once care about anybody with the exception of Dracula. And again, Mina, but she's being protected by Dracula. I don't know. I just, it's not that, there are scary moments, but it's not overall very scary.
Yeah, I agree. now comes the time where I realize that I think I don't find vampire movies very scary.
We have a couple coming up where I think your thoughts might change.
I really hope so, because I mean, like I mentioned before, like I don't really have a lot of experience in like the whole vampire genre, but like I do agree. The Brides of Dracula were very creepy, and I mean his transformation was like, it was okay, but it never really like hit that point for me where it was like creepy. And I mean, a dog got wet and escaped from a zoo.
and I definitely hear that, and that's also why I want to kind of cover. I want to get all of the Bram Stoker interpretations of Dracula out of the way, because the old Gothic novels are all very romantic, right?
Yeah.
So Dracula is usually painted in this like romantic kind of lens, which kind of stops it from being scary. We aren't going to be doing Interview with a Vampire. We just didn't have enough time to include it in this. But those vampires are a little bit more scary. I think Tom Cruise did a good job in that movie. But when we get to 30 Days of Night, we lose kind of the humanity behind the vampires.
Yeah.
Because you've seen that before, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen 30 Days.
So we lose their humanity, and they're a lot more terrifying. But I think because this performance from Oldman as Dracula being like very much tied to his humanity, you know? And having some kind of like respect for humanity, I see your point.
Yeah,
the old Gothic interpretation of Dracula isn't that scary.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just like some of the stuff is just like lost on me, because I mean it's, oh my god, it's 2020, and I'm just seeing this for the first time now. Some of it might just not work for me now, but
that's totally fine.
Yeah.
All right. So that being said, I gave it a 5.5 for how scary.
I gave it a 2.5. I should also mention, I think I actually told Larry about this, but I need
to point out that you gave it a less scary score than Salem's Lot.
Yeah. During Salem's Lot, I did not laugh as much as I did during this movie. A lot of the things just didn't work for me. And that's where I'm starting to realize, like, maybe I don't really find vampires that scary, but I'm hoping we get to some stuff that changes
that. Okay. All right. Scores. For plot, I gave it a 7, just gave it a 7. For cinematography, I gave it a 7, Justin gave it a 6. For audio, I gave it a 7, Justin gave it a 4. For how scary, I gave it a 5.5, Justin gave it a 2.5. That gives it a Here's Johnny final score of a 58% F. Looking at our vampire films, that actually puts it in second to last. Nosferatu is our top rated, followed by Dracula, followed by Bram Stoker's Dracula, and then in last place, Salem's Lot. In our overall horror media rankings, it is towards the bottom with the 58%. It actually falls right above Blair Witch 2016, the video game, and right below Clock Tower 3.
Yeah.
Movie-wise, though, it's right below Night of the Living Dead and right above Event Horizon.
Really? Oh, yeah. You know, that kind of makes sense. Overall.
All right. So stick around through our commercial from one of our network podcasts on the Kaleidoscope Media Network, and we are going to go ahead and get on into the closing.
Ghosts. Split souls. Monsters. Sociopathic villains. Cold-blooded murders, and nightmares becoming reality. Does this sound like horror to you? Actually, these are all things that can be found in the Harry Potter series.
It can be scarier than you might think.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Audrey.
And in our podcast, Wizard Studies, we talk about all these parts of the wizarding world, and even some more lighthearted stuff.
We can be found anywhere you listen to your podcasts, and on Instagram and Facebook as Wizard Studies Podcast, and Twitter as Wizard Studies.
Now back to your regularly scheduled horror talk on Here's Johnny.
That was an interesting viewing, because I was definitely expecting more.
That's a good way to put it, and
it wasn't there. Again, it had been a while since I had seen it, but that's what it is. We already mentioned that we're going to be having a special episode drop at some point with System Shock 2 with the guys over at Forever Classic Gaming. But our next weekly episode is going to be Justin and I sitting down and casting who we believe would fit the roles of the Dracula movie best. So we're talking about Van Helsing, obviously the Count himself, Mina Harker, Jonathan Harker, Dr. Seward, Renfield. We're going to cast all those and give our thoughts on why, who we think modern times, or even if we like a performance from before, who we would keep in those roles. Justin, is there anything else you want to throw in here before we move on?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just really looking forward to that episode. And hey, if you guys have kind of your ideas for castings, let us know.
Yeah, we would love the readers on the show. I'd love to know who you guys think would be a good Dracula. Again, we're talking specifically the Bram Stoker Dracula. So like Bela Lugosi, his performance, what we saw in Murnau's film, and then obviously in this one, like that kind of, those kind of roles. So that's next week. Justin, any last thoughts?
No, not really.
All right, guys. So until next week, protect your necks and stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at heresjohnnypodcast@gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at @heresjohnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/heresjohnnypodcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers, so head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.